Welcome to the Self-Storage Playbook Podcast. In this show, we're going to take you behind the scenes with fellow self-storage investors from around the country and look inside their operations to talk about their victories, lessons learned, and the current strategies they're using in today's market to dominate this fast-growing field. I'm your host, Terry Royce. Let's go. In this episode, I sit down with 26-year-old Logan Zuber, who first got into real estate in 2018 through wholesaling and single-family rentals. Recently, Logan has been transitioning into self-storage and commercial real estate. He, along with his partners, have acquired four self-storage facilities along with four additional commercial properties since June of 2020. We'll dive into what Logan likes about commercial real estate and why he's making the transition and how Logan is leveraging partnerships to move even faster. Let's dive in. Hey everyone, keep in mind, if you have a storage deal that doesn't fit your buy criteria, or you need help with a storage deal that's come across your path, I'm always happy to take a look as we are actively looking to buy more storage properties around the US. Shoot me an email at selfstorageplaybook@gmail.com to connect. And don't forget to connect with our Facebook group and help continue the conversation at www.selfstorageplaybook.com. Thanks, guys. All right, today I've got Logan Zuber from Indiana, and Logan is 26. I've been chatting a bunch online with Logan and kind of threw a last minute interview here together, and excited to have Logan on, man. Logan, you've been buying self-storage since about the middle of last year, but you've been doing residential since 2018. And, you know, when we were kind of chatting a little bit before we hopped on here, you were talking about that. So you got into residential just a little over 3.5-4 years ago, but have quickly transitioned into commercial. Tell us a little bit about how that happened, man, because that's like I feel like a little slow, a little silly, because I was in single family for 12 years before I got into commercial and self-storage, and you're in it for like a year and a half, and you're like, F this, man, I'm going to go buy four self-storages, four commercial. Like, I don't want to give too much away, man, but tell us about that, man. That's a lot real quick.
Yeah. So my start was I bought a 3-unit triplex in my hometown. It came up for sale as a family friend. I tried pawning it off on my buddy who had a 4-unit, and he said he didn't want it. So I looked at it. I ran the numbers. I realized, you know, with the downstairs tenant, my rent was going to be cut, or my mortgage was going to be covered. So after that, it was all gravy. So I moved into the worst unit, one of the worst unit. And for 3 months, I transitioned from, I slept on a yoga mat on the floor for a while with the plaster walls torn down around me. I had a microwave on the floor. You had to wear flip-flops whenever you got out of bed because everything was torn down. But I didn't have the money to remodel my apartment. I wanted to make sure I got the other vacant unit remodeled so I could get the income from that. So once we got the air mattress, I eventually got a real bed and got my apartment all done. I actually transitioned 2 of the units into furnished rentals. Just they cash flow really heavily. Not Airbnb, but mostly travel nurses. They do 1-month minimum stays. So my return on investment's been very good for that property. And I'm actually in the process of possibly selling it because it's the most I'll ever be able to get for it now. But I got a mentor in 2019. His name's Brandon. He had a 24 unit in my hometown, and I messaged him on Facebook one day. I'm like, hey, like, I'm 21 years old. Is there any way I can buy this apartment complex with no money down? And he, it's actually how he bought it, pretty creatively. So he kind of took me in under his wing under there. I provided value to him. We kind of started talking. And after a year or so, we started talking about strip malls. I was like, okay, you know, we can get in on that. And I took care of all of his mailing and everything. And he just kind of took the calls in. So eventually 2020 came. I quit my job in January of 2020, and I transitioned into it was 100% commission based gig where I was selling a piece of machinery that was like $250,000. So the commission was really good. If I only sold a couple of them a year, it'd be a very good year. But then COVID happened and no one was dropping $250,000 in cash. I think in February that year, Brandon had cold called this facility near us about 20 minutes away. We knew some other partners or other people, Brandon or Corey and Macy, their husband and wife. We knew that they were involved in some storage seminars and had done a lot of research on it. And Brandon and I knew like we couldn't just go and buy this thing ourselves because it was $100,000 down and we couldn't come up with that kind of money. So we brought them on, and we actually put it under contract a week before the shutdown happened. So nice. Didn't actually close until June because, I mean, it's easy to look back now on and be like, oh, well, you get over it. But back then, like, no one knew what was going to happen. Like, the bank started changing terms on us. The appraisals got pushed out. Like, you know, the world shut down. So yeah,
a ton of uncertainty during that time, man. I mean, that was when I closed my first deal as well. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Is this going to be worth half as much in 6 months or?
Yeah, it was a little nerve wracking, but you know what? I mean, we closed in June and everybody paid. We had a couple like COVID related non-payers and stuff, but for the most part, everybody paid. So, you know, when we went in with that facility, all four of us, we're like, okay, you know, we'll get it stabilized and we'll just start paying ourselves. But once we got in there, we're like, this is a pretty good asset. And immediately, you know, we all saw the sky high view of like, this could be a lot bigger. So at that point, we opted to agree to not pay ourselves a penny from the partnership and just put it all back into the business to grow. So in 2020, we bought a commercial property. It has like an H&R Block in it, just a single tenant net lease property. And then in February 2021, we bought a self-storage facility, our first out-of-state one. This one was in South Carolina. And then we bought another one this past August, so 2-3 months ago, down in Alabama. So now I have two facilities that I manage out of state remotely.
And that's a big jump. I mean, you kind of, that was a lot to run through.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's great, man. I mean, so the duplex, you were living in that duplex. What kind of got you, your interest peaked in real estate? Is this something you'd been looking at for a while, or is it just like, you know, you just thought rentals were good and cash flow was a good way to go for you? What, I mean, how did that transition? Was it long or just something you were like, F it, let's jump in?
Well, I got out of college and like I graduated in December and then that house kind of came up and I knew my buddy had a 4-unit that he bought with an FHA loan. And so I was like, well, that seems like the best way to buy a house. And like, honestly, when I got that first month's rent from the downstairs tenant who paid my mortgage, my whole, you know, persona changed. Like, I was like, this is the way to go. I'm focusing all my attention on this because I didn't want to work. Like I was working with my brother at the time and it was a stressful job. And, you know, we ended up moving that business. We kind of sold it to another business and then I had a real boss. And, you know, I used to be like a number two or number three when I was with my brother at that company. And then I had a real boss and I soon realized I'm like, I'm not made for this.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of entrepreneurs and investors, we jokingly say we're lazy and we don't want a boss or we don't want to work, but we're working twice as hard on growing what our goals are, whether it's buying properties or building cash flow or buying single family rentals than we would in our W-2. At least that's how I found myself.
So I would say I'm the laziest person I know, but I'm lazy in a very efficient way, and I will work harder than anybody else to not go get a job.
Yeah, I think I read a quote. I've seen a quote. It floats around Facebook and Instagram every 3 months. It's like entrepreneurs will work 80 hours a week to ensure that they don't have to work 40.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, well, that's, I mean, so you went the single family route and then you were partnering with this guy. So you came across your first facility by mailing for strip malls, it sounds like, just inadvertently. Yeah.
We had one facility that we were looking at buying in a town about 40 minutes away from us. And I think we were about ready to put it under contract, me and him. And it was around February or March. And then when COVID hit, you know, we were like, I don't think we, you know, strip malls, it's all retail. So everything in that strip center shut down. And yeah. We had the storage facility going at the same time. We're like, yeah, let's put our eggs in this basket. So yeah, I mean, I still am open to like the commercial retail stuff, but you know, storage, and we're slowly transitioning into like industrial warehouse, triple net leases, single tenant net lease. And we're kind of using storage, the cash flow you get from storage, as a vehicle to purchase those facilities that they might cash flow a little less, but there's no management at all. Like, I forget some of the properties we own sometimes because we don't hear from them.
Yeah, that's wild. And I'm curious to get into that. So is it more you want to kind of own commercial, like industrial properties and self-storage kind of coexist? Or is it really you're looking to transition from residential to self-storage and then to more industrial or heavy commercial properties?
So in regards to residential, like my three unit is the only one I have left and I'm about to sell it. And my partners, Brandon, Corey, and Macy, you know, they all have their own residential portfolios. And over time, they will likely sell all of that to transition it into commercial stuff. So yeah, I mean, storage is a heavily managed, I mean, it's a business. And, you know, I'm taking the phone calls, I'm dealing with the tenants, dealing with all the issues that come with that. Eventually I'll try to hire that out, but these are smaller facilities that cash flow really well. In order to do that, I have to manage them. Our goal is to kind of get into these facilities, and you know as well as I do, is you get in and you create that value in the first like 6 to 12 months. You raise the rents, you get the non-payers out, you fill up the place. So over time, you know, these out-of-state properties that we own, these storage facilities, we'll probably sell those because we're going to double the value on at least one of them and significantly raise the value on the other. And we can take that cash. We can pay off some of our, you know, we do use private money lenders, so we'll have created enough value that we can pay off the lenders and then go take all that extra income, put it as a down payment on a single tenant, triple net building, not have any investors in it, and it cash flows very well for us because we're the only people in it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the ones you have, so you've got the four properties, a couple of them are out of state. Is your criteria for the ones you've bought, maybe the ones you're looking at, does that vary between, you know, if it's closer to home, further away? Like, I guess what I'm asking succinctly is what, so far, what's made a deal for you, and maybe even how has that changed, you know, and looking forward? And I know that's like kind of a dynamic question, like we were just talking about before the show, like, you know, hey, we don't have those 40, 60, 80,000 square foot properties yet, and that may one day be our target deal avatar. But I guess, yeah, what's kind of like what you've been looking at, what you're looking at now, and kind of where you want to go as far as deal criteria?
Yeah, so we've only bought one storage facility that was on the market, and that was our South Carolina one. Now, this was I remember even seeing this because you're in some of the Facebook storage groups as well. And I saw people, I think I saw someone toss it around in there. So we opened it up on Crexie, and it was listed at like a 9.5 cap maybe. And the broker had the pro forma at an 11 or 11.5. So we dug into the numbers a little bit, and the seller, they did not believe in using Excel. Everything was like a cell phone picture of a piece of paper that was then scanned in and sent to us. So it was a lot of digging through. So then when I went to the other facilities around the area, you know, and looked at their rents and looked at their vacancy, we found out that the pro forma was really more like a 13.5 cap, which is a pretty big deal. We actually got the seller to finance that one. So they, you know, it's a note and mortgage, like they're holding 75%. And then we came up with a 25%. So it's been a pretty good deal to us. I mean, we weren't looking for anything in particular, just is there demand? And I can find that out by calling facilities, visiting websites. You know, I think they were listed on Google, but they didn't have a website. When we took over, she had 15 vacancies, and within 60 days, I got it down to one vacancy, and now we stay full constantly. And, you know, I know people say don't stay full, but I mean, I can't raise these rents any higher. Like I've raised rents on all the tenants.
That's awesome, man. So it's interesting. You know, I don't know about you, but when I see stuff like that, where it's just like handwritten, these are my records, I get excited. Like I'm yeah. Like, okay, I don't know what's going on here, but this smells and looks like a deal. You know, you're not seeing reports from StorEdge or ESS or whatever these places are. You're just getting some good old pen and paper notes. So that's to talk a little bit about that one. I mean, that's interesting that you were able to find a listed property, get owner financing on it. I find a lot of brokers just shoot down, you know, whether it's permissible or not, they're supposed to present to the seller as an offer, but they shoot that down because they're like, well, how am I going to get paid? They don't understand it. But you were able to structure all that. How did you go about pitching that to the seller and the broker? And was it an issue or was it not really an issue at all?
I don't think it was an issue at all. I know they had a previous seller financing deal fall through. So we knew they were open to it. And since we were putting 25% down, I think the broker's fee just came out of that 25%. So she was able to pay him in full. And, you know, it works out really well for her too, because, you know, her dad had built the facility, so it's been in their name forever. So with her financing it for us, I mean, we have a 5-year balloon on it, but she was able to get the price she wanted and we got the terms we wanted. And, you know, to go in and create a lot of value. Like I knew you know, they didn't raise rents on people. And that's like music to my ears is, well, we don't raise rents on existing tenants. And, you know, you get a tenant in there who he has four units and a rent raise to him now comes out to $100 extra a month. So like I'll get calls and I'll get yelled at and they'll tell me they're moving out and they never do. They always pay the extra rent because it's a fair price. You know, he was with me on the phone. He goes, well, I just don't think it's fair. You're raising rents. I've been here forever. And I'm like, well, look at it this way. You've gotten a rent discount for the last 20 years because you've never had your rent increased. And I think that kind of helped out a little bit.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's just the same story we hear a lot over and over from these smaller owners. They just run it, giving these good faith discounts and trying to be the nice guy, but they're not properly, the bottom line is they're not properly managing the asset, right? Mm-hmm. As investors, our job is to, whether it's single family, triple net lease, commercial, or self-storage, get the values and the rents maximized. And I heard somebody else say, you know, when you're full and you've got no units, you're saying yes to somebody at a lower price, but yet saying no to everybody at a higher street rate. It just crushes the value on these. I mean, if you don't mind sharing a little bit about this deal, what did you buy it at? Whether you want to share percentages or hard numbers, whatever you're comfortable with, but like just in that management over the last year and a half with the rates. And again, you're full, you know, they had 15 empty units and now you've got, you said, I think one. I think that's a big thing that there's this that has been kind of coming up over and over is the operations and how much, and we know it, but when you really see the numbers, you're like, holy cow, like I didn't do a lot to this place, but I drove the numbers way up, the operations and just how critical that is.
Yeah. So we bought that for 300, the one in South Carolina, we bought for 360,000. So she held the note and mortgage for, so that's 270 grand. And we put down 90. So our pro forma, you know, that's their current NOI was around $34,000 and our pro forma is $47,000. So if this thing appraises at a 10 cap, you know, we've just created $100,000 in value just raising rents. We haven't gone in and done any upgrades of the facility. You know, we just have increased rents and created a efficient system to where the facility kind of runs itself. Now I do have a boots on the ground, you know, any facility that we own out of state, you have to have a boots on the ground. And he's been very helpful to our business. And that's the beauty about the, you know, kind of what you can't do with a single family home is like, I kind of joked, I sent a picture to my partners like a month ago when I sent out a bunch of rent raise letters and, you know, for there's four of us. So I was like, well, I just raised all of your net worths by 18 grand just by sending out letters to increase rents.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about self storage is just you're not, I mean, it's a gift and a curse a little bit. I look at it as more of the gift, but you know, probably the one thing you love about triple net leases, you get these long leases with, you know, with some staggered rent tiers, but I love being able to see the demand increase and being able to like really buy. I mean, I look at self storage as like this dashboard and you can just fine tune all the knobs and it's exciting seeing those numbers increase.
Yeah. You can create the value in storage versus if you're buying the triple net stuff, which we still do like, you're kind of buying the value. If there's a 20 or 15 year lease in place, you know, and you're buying it at a 10 cap. Well, when that 5 year renewal comes up and their rent's going up 10%, you just create a lot of value just by owning it.
And so that's interesting. So with no major CapEx, you've increased the value 100,000 and you said at a 10 cap, which in today's market is probably a little conservative even.
Yeah, I try to be conservative on it just because, I mean, these are C-class facilities. I would love it if it appraised at a 9 cap, but it's a 63-unit facility. So I'm just kind of, I'm being conservative. But yeah, we're definitely hoping for a 9 cap.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference on these properties. But kind of where I was heading with that is, are you guys looking more? I mean, these ones out of state you're talking about in the near future, you might turn those and reinvest the proceeds. Are you looking more at big value adds in equity or cash flow or maybe a hybrid of both? Like what are you really looking for when you look at these currently?
So we don't want a facility that we have to buy and go in and put a whole new roof on. Or I guess with self-storage, it's kind of nice because the most expensive things are your doors and those really even aren't that much money. So that kind of can lead me into our other property, which is our one in Alabama. I think my partner, Brandon, he had cold called or we sent a letter on this one. And when he talked to the guy, you know, he owned 50, he's retired. He owned 50 single family residentials. he built this facility and he just kind of stopped running it. So on Google Maps, you know, you're going on the street view and it's right up to a highway. And there's a like decaying for sale sign that's been out there for years. So we're like, all right, well, that's a little interesting. So we open up the town. Most of the facilities don't have websites. You know, they have set hours, you know, call at 8 a.m. or something. You can only access it until 6 p.m. So when we bought that, I mean, basically the occupancy was zero. I mean, there was about 10 people in there. Of those 10, I think half were paying rent. And so we bought that in August, and now I have about 40 some units rented. So now we're at like 70% occupancy. And that was a really cool one because we bought that one. We actually bought that $150,000 on a lease option. So we put $5,000 down and we pay him $1,000 a month, all to principal. So in 12 months, you know, we're going to have a note due and we're going to have to pay him $133,000. But I mean, if we get that facility rented entirely, I mean, I have my notes here, at 90% occupancy, the NOI will be around $34,000. So at a 10 cap, that's $340,000. We just doubled, more than doubled that facility.
Hey listeners, whether you're looking to get on the fast track to buying your first self-storage facility, expanding your storage empire, or connecting with top level storage investors and operators, then join me and loads of other self-storage investors on a monthly interactive training by visiting www.storagerebeltrial.com. Here, you'll find an interactive group that hosts live monthly trainings in addition to an active daily forum that connects storage investors from around the globe and is hosted by our good friends of the Storage Rebellion. Mike Wagner and his team have generously offered our listeners a risk-free one-month trial, and you can check it out by visiting storagerebeltrial.com. Here, you'll have access to all the previous recordings and forums to check out all the solid content that has already been discussed, well as the new content coming up. I'm on these calls every month, and there are lots of other new and experienced storage investors as well. So come join us risk-free at storagerebeltrial.com. See you there. Yeah, that's really interesting too. You mentioned there the lease option, and that's a strategy you don't hear a lot of people, at least I don't, pitching. You know, you hear owner financing a lot, but how did you go? What was the reasoning for the lease option versus the owner financing with this particular deal?
I think one, because it kind of let us play it safe. So if like it didn't work out, then okay, well, we're out $12,000, which wouldn't be the end of the world. And also, you know, the seller knew we couldn't go get financing on this property because no bank's going to lend, you know, at least to us, maybe, I guess, on a very small facility that's already vacant.
I was going to say, so was that something that he wanted or something you guys just felt more comfortable with not taking title and ownership, full ownership of it until you maybe had a little bit more data on it?
I think he was okay with it because part of our agreement was, you know, hey, we're going to go in and the only thing we're going to do is add value to this facility because we're going to go through and fix all 40 of your doors that don't work anymore. So worst case scenario, you now walk away, you know, $12,000, $15,000 richer and you have a nicer facility. So I think that kind of sold it. I mean, obviously our plan is definitely like, this is going to be a very good facility to us that we're going to end up flipping.
Yeah, and did you do, because you guys don't technically have, you have the lease option. I've never gone through with one. But did you record it, like do the title work to kind of make sure everything was clean? What's the process with that with someone who's maybe not as familiar with the lease option process?
Yeah, so we definitely want to make sure you get title work done. We used a lawyer there in Alabama in that town. And we got to get some survey work done because there's a single family resident on the residential house on the property that we have to zone off. But yeah, I mean, as long as you go through the title work, do the lawyers, it's a pretty easy transaction. You just want to make sure the title is clean. Like we don't want $30,000 in liens against the place.
Yeah, because in 12 months you'll have a full settlement where the title transfer is correct.
Correct. So yeah, it is still in his name right now until we do until our 12 month period is up. So in August 22.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, that is literally one of the lowest risk deals I've heard of recently.
You know, well, it's crazy because there's a for sale sign out, and now I get calls all the time as like, oh yeah, like you guys want to sell that facility? I'm like, man, it's been for sale for 3-5 years. I don't know where you've been.
So was this guy, that's interesting, was this guy just not, like, he just wasn't right? I mean, it just sounds like he kind of gave up. You said everything was vacant, basically, except for 5 to 10 units.
I think he's at a point, because he's retired, and he used to own a construction company, and he had 50 single family residentials that are mostly paid off. I just don't think he needed it or cared to have the headache, because he was not gonna, you know, use a website or a software or anything. It was just, come knock on my door. If I'm here, you can rent a unit.
You gotta love it. It's crazy. Yeah. How some of these guys just, they're like, that won't work here, I don't need that. And it's like, well, that would actually make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, it works out really well, because he's got like a warehouse on this. It's like a 30 by 60 warehouse with an office too. So that's a big thing, is he gets to stay in that while we have the lease option. So at 12 months, then he has to vacate that. And I think we should be able to rent that for $1,000 a month easily.
Wow. Just as like to like a contractor shop or something like that?
Yeah, it'd have to be somebody, you know, we'd really trust, a commercial lease and everything. But I mean, it's a perfect, I mean, if you were running a small metal fabrication or wood shop or something, it is the perfect size.
Wow, that's awesome. So these ones you've got that you said they're kind of smaller, do you have plans to expand any of them, or is it just to sell them and move into something big?
The ones that we own up here in Indiana, I'm about a half hour away from them. So I do the on-site management for that one, which is me going up there once or twice a month. We are building at that one because, you know, we took over that facility. The previous owner, I think the most expensive 10 by 20 he had was $75. And I just rented one this week for $125. Wow. And that's been our best performing deal so far. It was our very first deal. So that worked out nicely. We have raised the NOI on that one by over $25,000. So a little over a year, we've added over just a hair over $300,000 in value to that facility.
That's awesome, man. And we kind of talked about the two out of state ones, but if you want, let's dive into those that are more local and just tell us a little. I mean, like I said, do those deal metrics vary any differently? Because you're kind of, it sounds like you're a little bit of a hybrid of the boots on the ground with those properties, since they are local. How does the management of the, and that can kind of transition into my next question, as far as, since you're managing them and handling the day to day, how does all that differ, and what does that look like for you and maybe somebody else who's looking to keep it more in house?
So when we first took over, you know, Brandon and I, because we don't work, you know, we don't have a quote unquote job, you know, we're both full-time real estate investors, whereas Corey and Macy, they're still W-2 engineers. So we have the time, we go up there. And when we started, you know, Brandon and I would go up, you know, we'd change out the hasp, we'd go clean out the, you know, use the leaf blowers, clean up around the facility. And then after about a year of that, you know, not even a year, I don't think, but I started getting busier because I was doing wholesaling and Brandon just didn't want to, and we didn't need to. We were like, okay, well, like my time is better spent if I'm focusing on my day-to-day stuff versus going up to this facility and blowing leaves where I can just pay somebody $20 an hour to go do and they'll be done faster than I will. When it comes to like managing our southern facilities, our out-of-state ones, the biggest takeaway I think has been the I don't even know what you would call it, like the social or the communicative differences. So and up here, like, you know, these are my people, like I live here, you know, a half hour away, like I just know how to communicate. I'm kind of a fast talker. I'm on the phone, hey, what do you want, got it done, okay. And the South has proven not to be a thing. You know, in South Carolina, they want to say, you know, hey, good morning, how's your day, how's it going? They want to do a little small talk first before they want to get to know you. And in Alabama, it's rural Alabama. You know, we're outside Birmingham and outside Tallahassee. A lot of people don't have credit cards. They, you know, they call, like they're calling, like I hear the Google ads when I answer the phone, so I know they have our address and stuff. And they're like, well, where are you located? And they don't want me to tell them the address. Do not tell them the address. They want to know, like, how do I get there? So I'm like, well, you know, you're about a half mile outside town, turn right at the cow type of thing. Like that's really how it is.
No, I'm laughing because the two I currently have are in, the one is in rural Georgia and the other one's in pre-rural South Carolina. And it is, the communication differences, like you said, are, it's just different. But that's part of the reason I like investing down in the South is, I thought you were crushing a Heineken right there.
Oh no, it's a sparkling water.
I was like, oh man, you bring us some for me. Yeah, it's just, but that's why I like investing down there. It's just a different, it's a different vibe, and it's, while it's kind of sometimes can be a little frustrating, it's also, there's this, I don't even know how the word, maybe you could sum it up better. It's like this, the people are just, I feel like people don't wrong. Like, obviously we have problem tenants and stuff like that, customers, but I just get like a better vibe from people down there. And everybody up in Maryland is probably going to give me crap for saying this, but I feel like people just treat each other a little bit better down there, man. And just kind of, it's a little slower. It takes a lot getting used to, but it's like it's a down home vibe. Like you were talking about your people in Indiana, but I feel like the people down there, like they are tight. Like you wrong one of them and it's like they're coming after you.
Oh yeah. It's kind of funny because, you know, I've been holding the phone like, well, and this isn't, I'm not mocking them, but they do have heavier accents. It's like, well, you talk kind of fast. You need to slow it down for me a little bit. And, you know, I called a contractor there once, a roofing guy. And, you know, a week had gone by and I hadn't heard from him. Like, so I call him back. I'm like, hey, did you get it out there? And his exact words were, well, I know you're not from down here, but we move a little slower down here. So you need to give us some time. So it's funny dealing with the intricacies of out-of-state management.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying you're taking all the calls and doing the rentals, like how, and you kind of alluded to that with the people who are telling you, they want you to tell them how to get there, not where the address is. But how, what's your experience been with the management in-house? Because, you know, most people I know are really trying to get that off their plate as soon as possible. I think it's not something I do on a day-to-day basis. When we took over both of our facilities, I handled a lot of the transition. And I think there's a lot to be said for kind of understanding what goes into that. You know, what have you learned? What do you like and dislike about doing all that? You know, and any tips for someone who's maybe taking over their first facility or just looking to keep their management in-house?
To me, it hasn't really been that bad. You know, the Alabama one, because it was vacant, it was definitely a lot more work up front because now I'm working on getting ads done. Like I'm posting on Google because Google just wants you to use Google. And you answer a lot of phone calls. You answer a lot of dumb questions. Well, what you think are dumb questions because you run facilities. And a lot of people get irritated if, you know, the price is the price. Like I have people yell at me like, well, that's too high for a price. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, you can't find another one. And so I like it. I mean, we don't, you know, if we had a 500 unit, 1,000 unit facility or whatever, we would absolutely hire it out. But because we own multiple 60-100 unit facilities, like it's just not really worth it to me. And it's not terrible. Like I do keep a second phone on me. Like that is kind of annoying. And I do miss phone calls and you try to return them as fast as you can, but you'll get people who call you 5 times at 3 a.m. I mean, I leave it on a silent overnight. I'm not that dedicated to where I'm going to take that call.
That's interesting. And so what have you found? Is it just with the operations? Is it just being, you know, doing these things virtually and not having, like you said, this guy in the machine shop? Just hopefully that he's there. Hopefully he's not. What would you say is the biggest improvement or biggest one or two improvements you can make quickly for somebody looking to ramp up or just kind of initial turnover?
Like just when taking over a facility and doing your own management?
Yeah. Or even like something you did that maybe you're like, damn, I shouldn't have done this. This was really dumb. Like,
I don't think I have a good answer for that because, you know, like I said, I was listening to your one podcast with one of your other guests and he said storage is a very forgiving business. Like, that's kind of the good thing about storage. Like nothing is ever really an emergency. Like, you know, I had single family residentials and if your toilet isn't working at 1 a.m., that's kind of an emergency. But, you know, if your door to your unit isn't opening up, like I'll get somebody out there in 48 hours. Like it's not that big of a deal. Having partners is a big help. You know, I know this show, like you're interviewing me, but, you know, I have 3 other partners and, you know, I do. We all have different, you know, I didn't just go into business with my friends. Like we are all friends, but we complement each other's skills. We don't have the same skills. Like me and Brandon are very, you know, we're talking to the owners. We're talking to people a lot. Corey and Macy, you know, they're engineers. So they're very analytical by heart. And, you know, they've got these crazy spreadsheets that make me want to puke looking at them. But it's nice because, you know, it's not my responsibility. Like I sincerely believe that I could not do this alone by any account at all. Like I still message Macy all the time. Like, hey, I don't know exactly how to do this. Can you fix it? And she's at work because she actually works very hard. And she's like, yeah, I'll get it done.
Yeah. And that was kind of my next thing is like a lot of people avoid partnerships and I've been in some and right now I'm kind of enjoying just being a solopreneur, as they say. But you, and we were talking about it before the show, you were really saying, hey, man, this has been super valuable to me. And you just said it again. I couldn't have done this without them. So I'm curious to hear, like, how you guys, you've kind of touched on it briefly, but how you guys came together, guys and gals, it sounds like, came together and kind of divided up the work, because you've got a 4-person partnership. And that's interesting to me, and I think a lot of people, because again, this is, I find, a mostly solopreneur business. And I do believe that, you know, when you find the right partners and the right, you know, they are part of your team, and you guys, and you can move a lot faster and get a lot more done. And I'd love to kind of expand on that and just kind of, you know, hear what's worked and what doesn't work. It obviously sounds like it does, is working great for you all.
To hit on the first thing, you know, we all met each other in our local RIA, which is, you know, listeners don't know, it's a real estate investors association where a bunch of investors just meet up. And I kind of hit on how I met Brandon. You know, I think when I had met him, he was 40, and he's been in real estate for better part of 2 decades now. And he's been my mentor. Corey and Macy, a few years older than me, I think they're in their early 30s. So when we bought our first facility, like I said, Brandon and I, we knew we couldn't go at it alone. And we knew Corey and Macy had really done their research on storage. Like, we knew that Brandon and I knew we could not do the bookkeeping, the financials, all that, or just didn't want to. And we needed other partners. And we've known them well. Brandon actually sold a good chunk of his residential portfolio to Corey and Macy. Again, they're husband and wife. So it's kind of like 3 partners, but it's 4. So when we first, that was something we laid out in the we didn't lay it out specifically in the operating agreement, but one day we all had lunch together in town, and we just kind of went over, it's like, how does this work? Like, you know, we're all going to go to the partnership. Macy and Corey work. Brandon and I have a little more free time. So what does it look like? So how we divvied it up at first was I was going to do day-to-day management, phone calls, emails, all that. Brandon would handle contractors, any issues that happen at the facility, and Corey and Macy would handle back-end operations, financials, because they're very systems-oriented. And I'm good at using a system if it's already built for me, but there's no way I can build one out very well. And as we grew, you know, plans changed a little bit, because it's like, all right, well, we're not just going to own one facility. We're going to own a lot of property. So now Brandon and I kind of deal with a lot of, so we do a lot of off-market marketing, phone calls, cold calling, direct mail. So if you get a letter in the mail from us, you know, they're calling Brandon. Brandon's talking to the owners. He's trying to figure out how we can structure a deal. And we meet every single Monday night on Zoom. And we're usually meeting for 2 hours or going over deals together, analyzing, talking about the business, going over, you know, how do we do this month at this facility, that facility, and then making sure our commercial properties sent their checks, because that's about all the management they need.
That's awesome. And somebody had commented in here in the comments section about, you had talked about you guys are doing the marketing. So, and it sounded like you hit on a couple different things. You're doing calls, you're doing mail, all that good stuff. Is there anything, you know, without giving away any trade secrets that you might have, like what you'd suggest for somebody who's looking to get started marketing that either?
Yeah, if, you know, I have found storage is a really nice barrier to entry because it's extremely hard to find, it seems. So what I've found to be the most effective is that I'll go, you know, we have virtual assistants. So I'd say, hey, here's a list of every single town in this state. I want you to go search on Google. I want you to find, you know, who doesn't have a website. And then I want you to go on the satellite view, and they know to look for these long, skinny buildings that look like storage buildings. It's really hard to do in the South because there's a lot of pig farms that look tall and skinny like that. I guess I would say just call these people. If you can't call them, send them a letter, just find out a way to interact with them. And, you know, we get a 1 or 2% response rate. So like, it's not a very good, like, I've not found it to be any better than single family, you know, marketing that way.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a lot of guys and girls that are looking to transition from residential to self-storage. And I feel like it's a lot of, it's always the same when you're looking over there, whether it's mobile home parks or apartments. I feel like everyone's like, man, that those guys are killing it. And it's this grass is greener. And I talk to a lot of people that are in residential. I'm like, self-storage is just as competitive as residential, as everything else right now. It's not like you're just going to hop over here and it's going to be this blue ocean of deals. You have to get out there and grind it and find, create the, I mean, the thing that I find interesting about storage, and you, it sounds like I'd be curious if you agree with this, is a lot of these people that are the small mom and pop owners, you have to put in time with them and more so to me than the single family people. Single family is just like a commodity. It's like going to a car lot. You got to put in the work, negotiate the deal. But just because there's not, I don't know what it is. I just feel like a lot of these people know that they have something. You may be getting it at a deal, but they also know that it does have value. And I find that there's a lot of legwork that goes into it, more so than single family. I'd be curious as your take on that, since you are also in single family and transitioning away.
When you're buying a self-storage facility, these owners, whether they're sophisticated owner or not, and I don't mean sophisticated as in that means you're smart or dumb. It just means, are you running this like a very real business, or you run this kind of as a hobby? And, I think these mom and pop owners, they know they have a business, and they almost always know they are not operating it the way that it should be, but they don't care because they're comfortable. So a lot of times the first phone call is about, it's just get to know you, because with single family houses, if I'm looking at some dump, any chunk can come up with 20 grand if they really have to get a single family house as an investment property. But when you're talking about a storage facility, very rarely are you talking under six figures. So they are, they're almost trying to qualify you on the phone, even if they have no intention of selling. They're basically saying, is this person worth my time to even talk to? So when you're on the phone with them, it's a lot of selling yourself, talking about what you're doing. Like, I don't just get on the phone and say, hey, you want to sell? Like, it's kind of, my name's Logan. My partners and I own a few storage facilities. I just want to reach out and see if maybe you were interested in selling yours, or we can just kind of talk shop. I own one about an hour away from you. Want to see how you're doing? And then ask them questions versus making it about yourself.
Yeah, that's a great point. What have you found has been the best rapport builder? I've kind of done a handful of cold calls and been tweaking some different things. For anybody looking to go that route, or even if they get a call from a mailer, what would you say has worked and even not worked for kind of dealing directly with some of these smaller mom and pop sellers?
Brandon does deal with a lot of the actual cold calling, and I've done it. But I think a lot of it is just asking them about their business. Like, how long have you owned these? You stay busy? Like, do you guys have any break-ins type of thing? Like, just kind of getting to know them. As I said, I wouldn't just straight up go, hey, we own $2 million worth of self-storage facilities. We'd like to add yours to our portfolio. And we've actually removed, we used to have a thing on our website, and our website's just, it's a landing page, basically, if someone gets a letter from us. We used to have, we own over 8 properties, over $2 million worth of real estate. And they saw that and they said, oh, these guys wouldn't be interested in our facility because it'd be too small for them. So immediately when they told us that, because we ended up getting them on the phone, I went and deleted that from our website right away, because you don't want to come off as too big. You definitely don't want to come off as too small. So you almost want to leave it a little vague. I guess when it comes to your website, leave it a little vague. But if they ask you, talk to them. And, a lot of them very much, they respect that we're buying in small towns. And like, I live in a town of 9,000 people. Like, I don't live in a big city or anything. So I kind of understand the small town charm that they like.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The point of view, like, kind of getting that, it's good that you got that feedback from those sellers, or that lead is just kind of getting a real raw take on, hey, this is what you guys look like to me. And whether it was the truth or not, that's what they thought. And I'm sure other people think it too.
Yeah, and that's what you have to be careful of. We don't want to sell ourselves short on any deal, because we'll look at any deal. Like, we'll look at deals that are too big for us, because if it's a good enough deal, you'll find somebody who wants to do it.
Yeah. You kind of hit on a lot of things here. I mean, I'm curious, like I kind of alluded to it in the beginning. I think we kind of spun around a little bit though, but from here on out, what would you say you mentioned selling your properties you have down south. What would you say the realistic timeline? I mean, the one in Alabama, it sounds like you've ramped that up rapidly. Is that something you're looking to turn around quick, or you guys have a 2 to 3 year game plan with some of these? Where are you going with it, I'm guessing? I know that's all. I feel like that with a lot of people, that changes. I'm looking at selling my one property now, but if you'd asked me 3 months ago, I'd been like, there's no way in hell I'm selling that.
Well, it's hard because, we had our meeting on Monday night, and I was telling them, from a mile high view, like, we know where we want to be in 10 years, or at least have a good idea, but we will pivot 100 times before we get to that exact goal. So, if you asked us a year ago, do we want to flip these? We'd say, no, the cash flow is so good, why would you want to sell them? And now, all right, well, after we own these for 12 months and we've created $100,000 in value or $200,000 in value, it's like, okay, Well, now I can take that 200,000 or 100,000 and what I can go buy, you know, multiple other properties with our own money to where we don't have to use private money lenders. And, you know, we do enjoy using them because that's what allows us to scale. You know, if we didn't want to use them and we wanted to buy one or two properties a year, well, great. We'll get to our goal. It's just going to take double the time. So we make sure, you know, on every property we buy, whether it be commercial, storage, we walk into equity on day one. We buy, right? You know, you buy in, you go in, you raise value. Like our industrial warehouse one, you know, we walked in with, I think it was 50 or, we look at so many deals. I think it was like $50,000 or $80,000 in equity on day one. And then you get a lease, you know, you raise rents over that because if their lease is about to come up, you know, that's a lot of value you can add.
I know most of our listeners are in self-storage, but I'm curious with the triple net lease, what have you found, I guess, is just quickly pros and cons of each of those first? We kind of touched on it briefly in the beginning, but me, I have very little experience with it. I've talked to some other guys on the show, but I'd love to hear kind of what the thing I'm into is triple net leases. You spark that interest in me.
They're really nice because, you know, self-storage provides a lot of cash, but it's a business and you will get taxed on a lot of that cash flow. So you need to be able to hedge that a little bit. And it's a lot of management. Like self-storage is a very high cash flow, but it comes with a lot of management. Now triple net, single tenant net lease, whatever you want to call them, you know, it's less management less management, but a little less cash flow too. So we'd like to own a pretty large chunk of triple net assets, but you can't just go buy one or two or three because, you know, if one goes dark or, you know, vacant, you know, that's 20% of your portfolio. If you just have triple net that went dark and you can't really afford that, to where we have the storage, the cash flow from it to be able to afford if anything went dark. So you can't buy one or two single tenant buildings. You have to buy 10 or 20. Because then if one goes dark, it doesn't matter because you have 20 picking up the slack. I mean, it's just like storage. You know, we have 246 units right now. What are the chances that 200 of those people don't pay on December 1st? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's always been my fear, or I guess anxiety around the single tenant commercial, is like, man, if these people move out, it's going to take me a minute to find somebody to move in. But obviously, that's where a lot of the big boys play, is in that triple net single tenant lease.
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, we're not some huge private equity firm with millions of dollars to deploy. So we have to grow responsibly. So that's why, back to what I said earlier, is you use the cash flow from storage as a vehicle to purchase these other properties. And like, I love storage. It's done great for our business, but I would, you know, 10 years out from now, I don't want to own 10, 60 unit facilities with different contractors, different boots on the ground at every single place. I'd rather sell those all, own a bunch of triple net assets, and then maybe like one 500 unit facility that we get a check in the, you know, we say check in the mail, but obviously that's very slow. You're getting wired to your bank account every month or ACH.
Yeah, it's a lot of little deposits, but I love it so far. Well, Logan, man, we've kind of touched on a lot of different stuff, and to see, you know, I know we've kind of chatted over the last, probably been a year on and off on Facebook and stuff. To be honest, man, I'm like super impressed at everything you've got going on and what you've achieved in the last year and a half to 2 years. I'd be curious, you know, for those listening or watching, what's one thing, having all this success in such a short period of time, what's one thing you wish you would have known before you kind of got into self-storage and commercial? And tying on that, what's kind of your biggest failure around this business and what you've learned from it?
The biggest failure around the business, I mean, it's hard to say with the business because, you know, every property we've made sure that we buy it well. I think it's kind of the lame, you know, the lame answer one gets is I wish we would have started earlier and partnered earlier. But like, you know, if I had gone at this alone, I would own one facility and I'd probably be running it not that efficiently. But because we partnered up, like, we're able to scale massively because Corey and Macy still have jobs. So they make us look really good to the banks. You know, we're finally at the point now where we're getting our tax returns, which, you know, is a big deal for when you're going out to get loans and stuff. And with my wholesaling, it does help. So buy soon so that it makes it easier down the road.
You say it's cliche, but it is true. I mean, it's a great business. And I know a lot of people are looking to expand and or get into it, but no.
As a business, you know, it just has the good, the pros of a real estate, but it definitely is. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of people every day calling you and just kind of, I mean, you get break-ins, you get non-payers, you have auctions, you have, you know, at one of our facilities, I'm pretty sure we had drug usage type of thing. I mean, that's just, it comes with it. And that's, I guess that's the only downside against single family residential to storage is that I can't, like, I'm not doing a background check on 300 people when they try to run a facility. It's, you know, you fill out this form online, you're in.
Hitting on that point again, that's something that a lot of people underestimate getting into this business is rent. Single family rentals are a business, but the self storage, I mean, it is, rentals are real estate with a business component, and self storage, you kind of hit on it, is a business with the real estate component. And people underestimate that. I mean, it is a customer service forward facing business. And if you mess it up, that's why a lot of these people don't manage them well, is because they just don't treat it like a real business.
It definitely is customer. I've had to I've had to ease my tone on the phone a lot because my girlfriend would always comment. She goes, "You kind of sounded really rude on the phone to that person." I'd be like, "Well, they didn't get it. Like, I answered their question." But now I'm a little more forgiving. I'm like, "All right, let's take it slow. I'll talk you through this." So yeah, I can't. You can say I can't wait to hire out phone calls.
That's awesome, man. Well, Logan, as we wrap up here, man, first off, again, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been kind of cool to watch your journey. And I know we don't know each other real well, but just to kind of see you and everything you've done over the last year and a half. If people have a deal or want to reach out to you, is there a good way for them to get a hold of you?
I think the easiest way is just to message me on Instagram. It's at LoganZuber17. You can feel free to send an email. It's Logan@HZCapitalPartnersLLC.com. Very long email address.
That's cool, man. I've got it and we'll put it in the show notes. And yeah, just as we wrap up, any last parting words or anything you want we didn't hit on maybe?
I know you keep saying, you know, me and my success, but it's definitely my partners. Like, I would not, it sounds cliche, but yeah, I wouldn't be where I am without them, because I really wouldn't be. And thank you for the show. I know we kind of touched earlier, like, we both, you know, we love some of the other storage podcasts, but they're talking about like $5 million deals. And there's not a lot of learning for me to do when we're purchasing, you know, sub $500,000 deals. So I think that's where you're providing a lot of value to people that think they'll really appreciate it as much as I do.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, man. And at the rate you're going, I think you're going to be getting into some of those bigger properties quicker.
Not if they're at five caps, I promise you that much.
You'll churn them up, man. Well, Logan, again, I really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to reach out to Logan, we'll put his info in the show notes, the best way to reach him. And we'll hopefully have you back on soon, man, talking about your next eight deals that you do here. So thanks again, man.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to this episode of the Self Storage Playbook Podcast. We'd love to know your biggest takeaways from the show today, and we'd love to hear from you at selfstorageplaybook@gmail.com. You can also find out more info on today's guest, the nuts and bolts of self-storage, and connect with other self-storage investors in our growing community at selfstorageplaybook.com and through searching our group on Facebook at Self Storage Playbook. And don't forget to go to www.storagerebeltrial.com for your risk-free one-month trial to the Storage Rebellion University monthly calls. I'll see you there.